It's the LA podcast. Am I spiking?
No.
It's the LA podcast. It's Hayes Davenport.
I'm Scott.
How are you, Scott?
I'm doing well. It's a good day out.
Should we dedicate the episode to the LA Times reporters who have to go work at El Segundo now?
Oh, do you mean we should do like a 3-hour long episode to cover their commute to El Segundo?
Yes, that's right.
What a rug pull.
I saw a very sad thing happen, which I went to this little event, this panel with some Times reporters talking about how they unionized.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about what a close call they had without even realizing it, because Trunk, before they sold the paper,
yes,
was planning to move to the west side.
Right.
And they were like, so that would have gone over so well.
And then
having to move to the west side.
So a major victory with the unionization they avoided. Obviously,
oh, yeah.
Catastrophic layoffs and the whole reorganization that Trunk planned for months, sure, and months, and then abandoned on a moment's notice.
And this week they exposed that the female reporters and reporters of color were paid a lot less than white men. I'm guessing that's just the battle they want to pick before their commutes, which is, I guess, sure, I understand that. We had a couple quick stories we wanted to cover. You wanted me to go first. I want to talk about something I read about the mayor this week. I don't know if you know this, but the mayor wants to be president,
yes,
of the United States.
I've heard both ways. I think he's convincingly
inferring from the fact that he is the first person, maybe in the U.S., to have visited New Hampshire, Iowa, Nevada, and South Carolina, the first four Democratic primary states this year.
This year, yeah.
That he wants to run for president. So badly.
I mean, and it's been obviously a source of constant rumors for the past several years.
Sure.
But now he actually has kind of acknowledged, yes, I think I should run.
But he's thinking about it. Right now he's in Iowa, and he gave a radio interview saying that he doesn't think it's that crazy that he's going to Iowa, because Iowans and people from Los Angeles are the same. He said, we're the same as Iowa. These divisions that there's the heartland and the coast to me are BS. He said, they're a farm state, we're a farm state, which you are not a state. You're the mayor.
Right, exactly. You have very little to do with agriculture, large or small.
And people have complained about how much he's traveling. That doesn't bother me as much. Like, mayors travel. They meet with other mayors. It's like kind of a show pony position.
Right.
This is like part of the job. That's not going away. Some of them just like don't show up for a week and nobody really cares. It's all like optics, mostly, for this job.
Yes.
Right? Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
It's part of the job. This is the thing that I am genuinely concerned about. Having a mayor who is running the city of LA for an audience of people in Iowa.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I kind of wonder, too, because it's like, what if you actually take him at his word that he thinks there's no difference between L.A. and Iowa?
Yeah.
That's almost more concerning if he remains the mayor, right?
Yes. If he actually thinks that Iowa, a state that is probably 95% white.
Right.
L.A. is 25%
right.
white. More than half of people in L.A. don't speak English in their homes. 54%, I think. Iowa's probably 54 people.
Yeah.
they elected Steve King in the state of Iowa. A guy who ties a little like bungee cord to his wrist to like not see Kyle in public.
He doesn't stop himself from retweeting like Identity Europa or whatever.
Yes.
Like, bungee cord doesn't accomplish that.
Yes. But he's like denting the roof of his car on the way home for work, like getting all the extra Sieg Heils out.
Right.
He is an Iowa representative. We do not worry about the same things in LA and in Iowa.
I feel like that's fair to say.
And it's, if you're governing like Iowa is watching, you are not serving what people who live in this city really care about. The Sanctuary City stuff, I think, is a good example.
Yes.
He has always been the kind of like wishy-washy about whether LA is a sanctuary city, because that is something that he can stump on all over the country, is being like, sanctuary city is like a weirdly defined, you know, yeah. we protect the people who live in our city, but like,
he what does that even mean? He slips into a, it's kind of weird because he's a very charming man. He's a so very charming. Charismatic speaker, but whenever the, and this was a big deal last year, especially when he was getting asked about sanctuary city policies all the time, he yeah. slips into this weirdly like pedantic didactic boring. Mode where he's just like, trying to pinpoint the exact definition of, and there's no legal definition. This saying that we're a sanctuary city doesn't accomplish anything. And everyone's like, well, it accomplishes that you're making Latino and Hispanic people in your city feel like you're looking out for them.
Yeah.
And if it really doesn't have any legal bearing, then what's the cost of not doing it? But he definitely was very cagey about not.
Yeah. He knows how to be inspirational and be able to be quoted. When he does that, it's almost like it's designed to not make any headlines.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's looking past LA to an audience yeah. that's much broader than who actually lives here.
I went to see him speak after a bunch of like ICE crackdowns and like deportations were announced. When they were threatening to pull federal funding from sanctuary cities or something like that, he went to CHRLA, the Coalition for Humane Immigration Rights, Immigrant Rights of Los Angeles.
Okay.
He went there. I saw him speak there in Spanish to like a, you know, to a bunch of people that had assembled there. And I cried at this press conference. He was so comforting. I mean, his ability to project basically any emotion is incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. And it's weird because he has this effect where like just sharing the same air with him, it's kind of like the evil dude on Jessica totally. Jones. You just
I'm not familiar.
Okay, you just kind of
special
like,
power is like yeah, charisma
he,
power.
He like mind controls you if okay. you're in the same room as him.
Yeah,
but like yeah, you just leave feeling incredibly confident, and then later are just kind of like, wait, what did he say?
Yeah, and like the way he handles policing here, if he's looking at how people in South Carolina are judging how hard he's coming down on police, that doesn't necessarily represent what people who live in the city will want him to do, need him to do.
Absolutely.
So he said in these interviews in Iowa that he's not going to make his decision for another year, which means that by keeping his options open, he is going to govern for a national audience for at least, I mean, it's early 2018. Still.
Yes. And so I think that the longer this goes on, and it does seem like it's going to go on for the foreseeable future, the harder that it's going to be for people in Los Angeles to think that he's taking their issues seriously.
Yeah.
And like considering them as foremost in his mind.
Yeah. So I guess resign until you decide or let someone else take the position. I mean, obviously that won't happen, but I do think it's true that he cannot do the job effectively while this is still up in the air
and
while he's running for that matter.
And just like one last thing is that it drives me crazy that when he's talking to LA Times reporters or whoever else, he still is talking about it like he's looking for a way out of running for president.
Yeah.
Which if you're going to do it, just do it. We can all have the understanding that you're looking for a higher office or whatever the case might be. But he still makes these comments like, if somebody else comes along that checks all the boxes that I think I check, then I would gladly step aside. It's like, really? You're spending all this time and effort on this, but you're
just waiting for someone else as good as you are.
Waiting for somebody better.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Inglewood.
Yeah. This is something that is a story I've been watching just because it always seems like it is getting more and more complex, but the layers are very indicative of where we're at in Los Angeles in 2018 in general. We're talking about media, we're talking about housing prices, evictions, and things like that. The new news coming out of Inglewood right now is that the Madison Square Garden Company, which owns the Forum.
Yes. This is James Dolan.
James
Dolan. Who owns the New York Knicks.
That's right.
He has a blues band, plays a harmonica.
Yes. Wears a fedora.
Yeah.
And he is suing the city of Inglewood for essentially defrauding them. There's another lawsuit claiming that Inglewood defrauded the public relating to a plan to bring the Clippers from Staples Center out to Inglewood in a property adjacent to the new Rams stadium that's being built.
Right.
Rams Chargers.
So basically saying that Madison Square Garden Company had an agreement with the city of Inglewood for a certain plot of land that they gave up thinking that it was going to go to
a tech park. Actually, yes. Yeah, so
a tech park.
This is something that Madison Square Garden Company, the Forum, was using this specific plot of land for overflow parking. They had a long-term lease with the city starting back in 2014 when they reopened.
Which I don't know how much... Prince is dead now, so I don't know how, how much the Forum was using its overflow parking.
No, I think they were just kind of sitting on it, and it was sort of a valuable piece of land to them. They were thinking they can just sort of hold on to it, but in partnership to the city they said, okay, we'll give up our lease here so that you can James Butts, the mayor of Inglewood, said we have a tech tenant on the hook for this plot of land if you give it to us.
It's incredible. It's a testament to how derelict media has been in LA that more people don't know that we have a Mayor Butts.
So anyway, Mayor Butts, I guess by tech tenant, what he really meant was tech billionaire Steve Ballmer, who owns the Clippers.
That's right. So technically, or maybe that's what it meant. It's like a tech park is like technically, it is a park. It's going to be a stadium for the Clippers.
For the Clippers.
And it will also hold events for you to compete with.
Right.
Right next door to the Forum.
The Forum is really mad about this because they had actually
talked. A lot of good guys in this fight.
There's so many good guys. Ballmer, a lot of people like him.
Yeah, Steve Ballmer. Yep, you've got the great James Dolan.
And then you've got Mayor Butts.
And Mayor Butts.
Who is transitioning from like small-time mayor to like ascendant supervillain type, where he is actually... basically has been playing both sides of this deal, saying that it on one hand, he went to the Forum and told them, we're going to use it for this specific purpose, went to the LA Times and said, I don't know anything about the Clippers planning to move here.
Yeah.
Then later last year, in June of last year, he came out and said, we are in exclusive negotiations to bring the Clippers here to this exact plot of land.
Yeah.
And put in his newsletter, I started talking about this in January, simultaneously to when I was talking to the Forum about dumping this,
giving up the lease, and then a month after that, saying lying to the Times, that he had had no conversations about it at all. What? And he's been in trouble for stuff previously with his sister. What was that story? Oh
God, that was his brother.
Oh, his brother.
And this was something that he's not really in trouble for. This has made
made his brother like a $200,000 a year garbage man or something like that.
This is something that arguably he should have been in more trouble for. The LA Times just found out about this really recently. But I guess a couple of years ago, there was a trash collection contract that Mayor Butts went to all of the bidding companies and allegedly said the winning bidder is going to hire my brother to this.
Like a little back channel thing and said like, hey, wondering if you have any spare jobs.
Do you have a job for my brother?
Yeah.
Just, you know, I know you're bidding for this thing. I know my brother's looking for work.
Yeah.
And whoever wins this contract is going to have my brother working there.
Yeah.
Just that kind of thing. And then just by total coincidence, the brother does work at the winning bidder now.
Yeah.
He's been working there for the last several years.
That's crazy that it worked out like that.
It is crazy. And multiple of the losing bidders have said that
they pointed this out
took place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yes, he has sort of been, he's sort of been doing some, I don't know, things.
But that is the kind of like local corruption that is very endearing.
Right.
And everyone thinks it's just like funny and nice. Once you start getting into these like billion-dollar stadium deals and stuff like that, it's a little more concerning, I guess.
Yeah, it's a little bit more noteworthy. Now, so the other issue regarding the stadium deal is that in California, we have something called the Brown Act, which requires public agencies to be transparent with residents and, you know, put things on agendas that people can see before meetings take place and everything.
Yeah.
And Casey,
which is just, you just nail something to a board at the community center or whatever, and nobody, it gets like pool water on it and yeah. Nobody notices it, but it's just something you can point to when they try to sue you later.
But it's just something that's there and people can read it and know that these things are happening. And in June, when they announced that they were doing this deal with the, or entering talks with the Clippers, rather, basically KCET went back and found documents that the lawyers for the city and the lawyers for the Clippers had an email correspondence where they had talked about the fact that the Clippers didn't want this to be public before it absolutely had to, because they were talking to other sites or whatever.
Sure.
So the Inglewood lawyers were like, yeah, no problem. We're making this a special meeting so that we don't have to do specifically so that we don't have to do advance notice and let people know that.
Oh, so it was like exempt from.
It was exempt the from the 72 hour disclosure. Oh, okay,
because they just didn't want people to know they were talking about this.
And then they put it under, you know, an LLC so that it looks like it's somebody out in New Jersey rather than Steve Ballmer doing this Clippers deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So shady. But he's like Mr. Stadium, Mayor Butts, right? Everything you read
Everything
about him
is
him. He got the Rams. I don't really have a sense. I mean, like, I don't know how strongly people feel about this one way or another, but like in Inglewood, is it something that people like, or is it something that I mean, he got reelected, I guess, by a huge margin.
I think he had 83% of the vote.
Sure.
And so, I mean, you can basically say that Inglewood is going through like a really aggressive civic rebrand. Prior to the Forum reopening in 2014, there wasn't a lot going on there. The city had lost most of the business from the Forum.
Yeah.
When the Staples Center opened, they lost 3 professional sports teams. They lost the Hollywood Park racetrack. Mm-hmm. And so Butts was kind of responsible for a resurgence in the downtown area there. And now he's just continually pushed harder and harder to the
More.
Point where you get this year him saying, you know, this Madison Square Garden suit is a sham and they're trying to like shackle his ambitions or whatever.
Okay.
And it just sounds like it's really intense at this point. I think people were generally on board with the NFL thing. And that was really afterwards that there became a concern about rising rents, gentrification along the incoming Metro Crenshaw line.
Yeah.
Where Butts is also a director on the Metro board right
now.
And so you've had a push for rent control in the city. You've had a couple of groups fighting against evictions. One of those called Irate, Inglewood Residents Against Takings and Evictions, is the group that is...
Takings? That's where the acronym becomes a little bit of a stretch.
You're pushing it at that point. I mean, I guess eminent domain, that would be really hard to say.
Yeah.
But They are one of the groups suing him or suing the city, trying to get the stadium stopped because there are going to be eminent domain proceedings and there is the fear of displacement around this. So there just hasn't really been a sense that Mayor Butts is all that concerned. He's talked a lot about increasing property values. He's pushed back against groups that are trying to say, instead of arenas, we need affordable housing on these sites.
Uh-huh.
And he's just really... kind of just dodging the question of whether Inglewood is going to continue to be a city where low-income residents who have made up the majority of the city for a very long time can continue to live.
It seems like it would be a good compromise for him to allow rent control in the city or allow more affordable housing construction in exchange for these arenas. I mean, you still get the arenas. You still get the additional business from the arenas, unless you do want more expensive development in your city, which maybe he does, that is actually what he's interested in.
That seems like what he wants. I mean, he said to a couple of different outlets that he envisions Inglewood as the new sports and entertainment capital of Southern California.
Yeah.
And has said that downtown Inglewood is going to be the new downtown Los Angeles. And, and famously, downtown Los Angeles is undergoing its own gentrification currently. So, I mean, he really has this vision of Inglewood as kind of like the media capital of the West Side.
And okay.
That's what he wants for it. And he hits back at anybody who isn't really on board with those plans, including these community groups.
I wonder, I mean, and I also, well, like, I have half-season tickets to the Clippers. I've never had an issue with them at the Staples Center. I'm not sure exactly what their complaint is, although maybe they just want to own the stadium.
Ballmer wants to own the stadium. He wants to
make money off
the
stadium. Because right now they just pay rent to AEG.
That's exactly it. And the Forum actually offered the Clippers earlier. They offered to bring the Clippers in.
Yeah.
Ballmer said, no, I want to own the stadium. I don't want to be renting from anybody.
Right.
And so now you're going to have... The Forum is concerned about loss of business because if they leave Staples, then you have Staples booking concerts, which they have a limited calendar window to do right now with the Lakers, the Kings, and the Clippers.
Okay.
And then you're going to have the new Clippers arena also booking concerts. So right now, the Forum has 40% share of all of the major arena concerts that come through the LA area.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they're worried about.
Got it.
Yeah. Yeah, so many good guys in this fight.
I mean,
you just want them all to win.
There's impossible to take a side.
You just want them all to win.
Yeah. We want to talk about... Oh, well, we have our first guest, who we had a conversation with weeks ago.
Right.
About permanent supportive housing. We have two people, Alexa Roman and Janet Kim, who work with the League of Women Voters, advocating for permanent supportive housing in Los Angeles.
And they came through and they talked to us about, they have a really great informational packet, which I think is still really relevant.
Extremely.
About what it takes to actually build housing for the homeless, get people off the street, get people services that they need.
And Janet and Alexa are going to talk about it. And the chairs, little pieces are going to pop off the chairs as we're talking. Just press on. Yours is fine.
Ignore that.
Okay, yours was very well put together. The rest will. It might just like drop like 3 inches at once. You just have to power through.
I just noticed that the little IKEA wrench is still on the floor.
Is so that what all those bolts and things on the ground are?
Those are, those are chair bolts. Food.
No, thankfully,
that would be
weirder. That would be worse. Be
more no, it's like everything here is disintegrating.
I know, and it just got put together today.
Is this a fake office?
Like, I mean, basically, like, as much as
it's pretty much a fake office. Yeah.
Our first guest, Janet Kim, is on the Los Feliz Neighborhood Council. You work with CELA, the Silver Lake Echo Park Los Feliz Outward Village Hollywood Neighborhood Homelessness Coalition, that I also work with you on. So people are asking, like, how'd you get Janet Kim? Well, yes, okay, I know her from this organization.
Yes, I've seen you before.
Yeah. But you're here in your capacity working with the League of Women Voters. And so is Alexa Roman. She's giving a peace sign. I just want to say, for the podcast media,
for the folks at home,
you have to say the word peace. You can't just give the peace. Yeah. And you guys work on housing and homelessness.
We do. The Homeless Action Committee.
Yeah. We initially started off working just on homelessness. But, I mean, if you try to tackle homelessness, it's just not about homelessness. It's about housing. It's about food insecurity. It's about poverty. It's about gentrification. I mean, there's so many different things that go into it that needs attention, and you need to understand that this is part of a complex societal problem. I mean, homelessness is the most visible symptom of something desperately wrong with society.
Are you saying that Scott needs to when you say you need to understand that?
I'm internalizing. That's I'm sorry.
Listeners, I'm looking at Scott. I'm looking at Scott with intention.
And you guys are working on a few different specific projects right now. Because I always hear people in LA being like, well, what do I do? What can I? Oh, I can't take these people home and like with me. Like, what is there? Like, there's no real solution. But you guys do have some solutions that are very good and very promising. And you're helping get the word out about them. And you have a pamphlet.
We do, yeah. So Janet and I and the members of our committee wrote, researched and wrote a guide to supportive housing called Yes in My LA. And the main reason that we wrote it is that, as Janet said, housing is a critical piece to solving homelessness. And it's how the city wants to end homelessness. Build housing is the solution that we're pursuing as a city. We voted to back that plan as voters with Measure HHH. So the biggest thing people can do is support housing in their neighborhoods and not just like, yeah, I support housing, but actually go to meetings and support it.
The pamphlet's beautiful. Alexa, you did some design stuff for it.
Alexa actually led the project and wrote a good deal of it, did all the layout. I mean, she's so incredibly talented.
So I insulted you when I said you did some design stuff. You worked on the office. Did you do homelessness no. pamphlets for the office?
Did not do graphics for the office or work on homelessness.
What did you art?
Yeah, I was art department coordinator for the office. Art department coordinator. Yeah, I did a lot of video playback. You know what that is, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
for the folks at home, it's like screens, phones and screens.
You did an amazing job.
But Janet, so like you said, housing is part of the issue, but it is also kind of just, we see a lot of people that are unhoused. I mean, anybody who goes outside in LA, it's becoming more and more visible. Homelessness is a longstanding issue, but it's definitely obviously getting worse in a way that a lot of people can see it who maybe haven't necessarily always been able to see it. But I think you were right to point out that there are a lot of other things that go into making that a worsening crisis, a worsening epidemic in our city. So supporting housing is great locally, but you guys also have laid out some strategies to do other things that you think are going to tackle homelessness in a more lasting way, I think, right?
The main thing is supportive services, which is we build a special kind of housing for the homeless called supportive housing, which is what the guide is about. So the approach that the city is taking is called Housing First. So the idea is that we build the housing, we place them in housing with no requirements for mental health, for jobs, anything like that. Once they're in housing, then they have doctors, they have mental health services, job training to give them the support they need to become contributing members of society, to become healthy. So that's the key. That's the key is the supportive services side. And they do, people in LA who are homeless get tracked by this thing called the coordinated entry system. And they, some of them have case managers already. So they're somewhat getting services and being tracked like by their vulnerability when they're on the street, but then that way when they get into housing, they can be appropriately supported.
Going back to the League of Women Voters guide, a lot of people don't actually understand what permanent supportive housing is, and a lot of people don't seem to understand that there are people who are chronically homeless, and not just because they're suffering from mental illness, but they're just very low income, or they might be battling substance abuse problems. And so you can't just shove people into housing and say, like, stay housed. Mm-hmm. You have to provide the wraparound services that permanent supportive housing accounts for. And so that people can stay successfully housed for over a year. I mean, it's evidence-based that this is the best, most cost-efficient way to deal with chronic homelessness.
Your guide says, for an unhoused individual, the average monthly cost for public services is $2,897. For someone living in supportive housing, it's $605.
Yeah, that's a big difference. And that's because of, you know, police and emergency services.
Yeah.
And it's completely inefficient for any city to say to people experiencing homelessness, okay, we can't help you, but we're going to force you to rely on publicly funded institutions, which are actually quite expensive, to help you just temporarily. I mean, it's so fleeting, the assistance they do get from emergency rooms, or, I mean, incarceration is extremely expensive. And is that the best way to...
Right. What is it really doing at the end of the day, incarcerating somebody, having them go...
I mean, I guess some people can argue that at least they're temporarily off the street, or if they are mentally ill, then maybe they, if they were arrested and went to jail or prison, they would have access to mental health care, etc. that just seems really wrong to me, and that's not really the kind of society that I want to live in. That's not
right.
That's not a good long-term solution for anybody. It's not a fair solution. It's not just. I just think that there are better ways, and I mean, if we're not providing housing and shelters, transitional housing, permanent supportive housing, what have you, then we're just going to have this system where people are cycling out of prison or emergency rooms and hospitals, and we're essentially making our public librarians and metro bus drivers mm-hmm. and other people ad hoc social workers. I mean, a cop is a cop. A cop yeah. is not a social worker. A cop is not a mental health professional. And that's why we are so supportive of the new permanent supportive housing ordinance and the interim motel conversion ordinance.
Yeah, talk a little bit about what each of those ordinances does.
So overall, they're just basically meant to streamline the approval process for permanent supportive housing to go through, to be built, and for motels to be converted to transitional housing units. And so permanent supportive housing ordinance, that one is going to increase the maximum amount of housing units before a site plan is triggered. Right now it's 50, I believe. So that's why permanent supportive housing developers are currently building 49 units or less, because okay. that's basically the threshold for which they're not going to be going through this
through like a big review process. Forever.
Yeah, and essentially a lot of developers are just going through these processes where, you know, it only takes one individual to file an appeal or yeah. you know, threaten litigation, and things will come to a grinding halt, at least, you know, for a little while. And so if we if this ordinance passes, then we would up that limit, that threshold, to 149 wow. and in areas like downtown LA to 200.
I saw that there are no parking requirements too for
there
residents.
Are, no, there are
some, but it's reduced parking.
It's reduced parking. You're going to have to.
I thought it was none for residents and some
that's
for
right.
People
so,
that work.
So these permanent supportive housing ordinances are for projects that are going to be at least they have to be 100% affordable housing, with at least 50% dedicated to people experiencing homelessness. So the units dedicated to formerly homeless people, they have waived parking requirements, whereas the very low income units would
have. Oh, those
have,
still do. Oh, yeah. Okay.
And they would have to have parking spaces for support staff, and okay. there has to be on-site support staff.
Right.
So, I mean, this is huge, because a lot of developers are investing only in projects that are 49 units or less, because it saves them a lot of time. It saves them a lot of money. And so with this ordinance, we could shave off up to a year and a half in the approval process alone and save millions of dollars per project. Right. Because, I mean, it really is a shame that a lot of developers had been choosing to build projects that had less than 50 units, even right, though they were zoned for a lot more, because, yeah. I mean, it's just a pain. And, you know, is it really, really worth it?
Right. I mean, we have, you mentioned in your guide that the most recent count, which is not the one that they just did in January, but last year's,
yeah.
Found that there were something like 58,000, almost 60,000 people experiencing homelessness in the county.
That's right.
Yes. Which is an incredible spike from, so I'm looking at the guide. It said in 2015, 44,359 people. In 2016, 46,874 people. Big increase, but then in 2017, 57,794
yeah.
people. Like a huge, huge spike. And, you know, honestly, in a period, this was after a state of emergency was declared on homelessness in 2016. And then it got like 25% bigger as that was going on. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, it seems like what you're getting at is like no one approach is ever going to be enough, because the numbers now are just like staggering.
And yeah, I mean, the city has like a 100-page comprehensive strategy document. And I think there's 98 strategies that the city has, which so Measure HHH is funding housing and I think some temporary shelters. H is funding a lot of the prevention and then the supportive services side. The motel conversion ordinance comes out of that strategy report. So converting adaptive reuse of existing properties is one of those strategies. But yeah, there's a bunch of strategies in there, including foster care, you know, preventing kids in foster care from becoming homeless, domestic violence. Like, it's called the Comprehensive Homeless Strategy Report because it is comprehensive.
It is, but I think it's also really important to understand that this starts from a very early level. We can go back generations and see that currently, or we have so many institutional failures that prevent people from becoming successful or that are holding people back from being productive members of society. And we just did, the Los Feliz Neighborhood Council just did a hygiene kit drive for the 17,000 plus students who are experiencing homelessness within the LA Unified School District. I mean, that's a shocking number, and it's even more shocking to understand that those are only the people who are self-identifying mm-hmm. as being homeless, yeah. because there are a lot of reasons for not wanting to identify yourself as being homeless. And like Alexa mentioned, people transitioning out of foster care, also people transitioning out of incarceration, like what are we meant to do with them and what kind of opportunities do they really have and like what chance do they really have to be successful when, you know, they're essentially doomed from the start. So I don't want to go back in, or I don't want to go like really, really big and talk about mass incarceration and what that did to society. Yeah. I don't want to talk about, you know, Rockefeller drug law. Like, I don't want to, I mean, I could go on.
I'm ready. I'm ready for it.
I mean, I could go on forever and ever, but.
Which, I mean, but what this is all speaking to is there's a very significant racial disparity in
the homeless
population. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. It's complete. This, I mean, if you really consider, I mean, the fastest growing demographic, I think, for homelessness was Latinos.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. This yeah. past year, there was like a really, really big.
And yet, half of the population, I think a majority of the population of Skid Row in particular, I used to live really nearby there, is African American.
Yeah.
Which in LA County is staggering. I mean, that's yeah. just like.
Yeah, LA is like only, I think, 8% black
yeah.
overall population. So it is right. really. Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, if you think about the solutions that people are proposing, like let's all buy them a bus ticket and bus them out to Detroit so they can live in right. empty houses, or I don't understand why we just can't ship them out to Sylmar.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, these are not solutions, and this is a problem that the League of Women Voters really, you know, we absolutely
join the League of Women Voters. It's LWVLosAngeles.org.
I have a very stupid question, and you may know what it is.
Well, if it's a stupid what question and you know voters? It is,
nope, nope, it's dumber than that.
Do you want to ask it and really
when
embarrass yourself?
When you say yourself? Join, is it only women that join this organization?
No, it's open, all genders.
Okay. We want everyone to be a part of this.
We actually had a male community. President, David.
Was he white?
I think he's white.
Just kidding. Janet did kind of give Hayes a look when he asked that question.
Yeah. Hayes, you could run for president.
I said it was very stupid. Another thing I didn't know about permanent supportive housing, I just want to confess to not knowing this. Mm-hmm. I did not know that the resident pays for 30% of,
oh, yeah. And
pays 30% of whatever their income is
towards
it.
Up to 30% of whatever income they derive from disability or Social Security.
Or their work.
Yeah.
Or right. It's 30% of their total earnings, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Up to 30%. So, I mean, this is also something that we need people to understand, that this isn't a free ride. You know, like, it's not some bleeding heart liberal thing to like really do handouts. I mean, this is something that you are paying for, and you are entering into a lease just as you would any other market rate apartment, and you're meant to abide by the terms of those lease, or by the of the lease. And if you're in violation of the lease, then you will be evicted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something for people to understand, that it's permanent supportive housing, but it's treated just as market rate housing is.
Right.
It's also not easy. It's not easy to get into housing. Like, it's not like you can just yeah. walk in the door and be like, is anything available? Like,
exactly.
There's not enough available, which is why we set aside $1.2 billion to build a fraction of what we even need.
Mm-hmm. What is that, 10,000 units at that?
If we can build them, right? So that's part of the ordinances is to try to
speed that up.
All of our city, ironically, all of our city council members just pledged to build 222 units in their districts, which is already part of what we set aside. But it's like, if we don't, if we can't build it in your neighborhood, and we can't build it in your neighborhood, then we can't build it anywhere, and then we can't build it. So we really need people to support it in your neighborhood, like in your backyard.
So that I mean, that doesn't that seem like almost lowering the bar, because we have money for 10,000 units, but they're saying they're going to build
by 2020, by July 1st, 2020.
Okay, so this is like a speed up.
It's a pledge. They're not, I mean, it's a public commitment that they made. No one can really, you know, enforce it, because it's not something that, you know,
it's on their honor.
If you're saying, if you're telling everyone that you're committing to this, then you're just gonna look like a jackass if you don't deliver. And I mean, this is what it means is so important, because we really need geographic equity when it comes to this. We can't have, you know, permanent supportive housing only being built in like 3 or 4 council districts. It's just not going to work. They need to be built where people are experiencing homelessness.
Even within council districts, I got in kind of a snippy fight with Mitch O'Farrell on Twitter about this.
Oh, I heard about that.
Can you talk about that? I did not think I was being nasty or anything. All I said was he was tweeting about how we already built 300-something units in our district. A lot of that is because PATH is in the district and is building 180-something units. Those units are going up in Rampart Village, Westlake, the lower income parts of District 13, Mitch O'Farrell's district. And I said, hey, I live in Silver Lake. I think this is great. It would just be great if some of the higher income neighborhoods, we also got some supportive housing here too, so we're not putting all the burden on the lower income parts of our district.
So what was the response, Hayes?
He said... Well, since you asked...
Okay. I think your listeners... Really
he said, thank you. If you read the thread, we already built 300-something units in District 13, so we're ahead of schedule. And so I responded... I wasn't sure he had understood what I said, and so I responded to that and said, I did read the thread. All I'm saying is... I would like a fair distribution within our council district for some of this housing. So it's not only going to the poor neighborhoods. And he said, some variation on thanks. Yes, we need fair distribution of this. So we ended in a great place. It just got a little bit snippy for 1 second.
I think it's important that everybody ask for that. And I think what's nice about the pledge is that it's all of the council members saying, we're sharing this.
Yeah.
We're sharing this commitment. And I think we as Angelenos need to say that in each of our neighborhoods. We can't say
absolutely.
We can't point and be like, but put them in Skid Row.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Do you have anything you want to plug?
The Yes in My LA guide is at yesinmyla.org, and the league is at lwvlosangeles.org. I think I spelled that right. It's the League of Women Voters.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I don't know.
But no more acronyms. Yeah. I'm done with these. We can't do Sela anymore. We have to always say Silver Lake, Echo Park, Los Feliz, Atwater, Hollywood.
Sela does need a branding exercise.
I mean, I really need to think about it when I'm saying the whole thing. So.
Yeah, I'm never gonna say that.
Yeah, but I mean, the important thing is
I will join
them. The important thing is the Yes in My LA guide. Everyone should read it. Everyone should share it with their neighbors. It's yesinmyla.org. And also, Sela, you can check out our website or our Facebook page. It's as simple as facebook.com/SELAHNHC.
Very simple. Nice, clean acronym.
Was there an N in there?
Sela Neighborhood Homeless Coalition.
If you're a branding expert, please, please join
us. Please contact Sela.
Yes, please.
That was great.
That good. Very convincing that you just listened to the interview instead of just recording a tag. That's the LA Podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another guest, I hope, or we'll just talk about some new thing.
I'm going to work on my tag drops.
Do one more. That was great. That we can use for the next episode.
That was great.
That was much worse.
That was great. No, oh, that sounded conciliatory. Like
yes.